Robin Hepburn on here. We have a full compliment here. The usual ones plus two new. Well, no, Norman's not new, is he? Norman's no. He's been knocking around for a couple of years
few
now.
Years.
Yeah. we do invite Moira here.
Yes, she's new.
Great activist, but she will mention that herself a little bit later on, no doubt.
Troublemaker.
That's good, because that's what we do. Right, well, talking about Israel, I know we've mentioned it before on a few occasions, but I didn't have a book to promote in those times, so... it's Outcast Nation is what I've called my next book about Israel, which... it comes from Jeremiah 30:17. But I will restore you to health and heal your wounds, declares the Lord, because you are called an outcast, Zion, for whom no one cares. And I suppose all, you know, I don't know what we're going to talk about today, but recently we've had this United Nations situation with the Palestinians wanting to declare statehood, and the speeches we saw at the United Nations from Abbas for the Palestinians and Netanyahu for the Israelis. And I mean, I suppose in many ways there's not really any neutrals here, but perhaps there are. But I just wondered how those actually came across, those particular speeches that they made, because the one from Abbas was very much offensive about Israel not even mentioning any Jewish links to the land, when he talked about the history of the land, how important it is for Muslims and Christians, but didn't mention Jews. And very rarely used the name Israel in his speech. He talked about the occupiers, that's the word that he used. And then Netanyahu, who, you know, for the defence afterwards, simply just given a historical study of facts and realities about what Islam really wants to do to the Jews, which hasn't changed in all these decades. They still want the whole land, and you only got to look at the state emblem for the Palestinians, and it's a picture of the land totally Arab. With, you know, it's not just the West Bank or Gaza; it's the whole thing. So you wonder what the aim is. So I'm rambling on, not sure where it's going, but just wondered, did anyone else see the United Nations speeches? And you also hear the speeches? Or?
Yeah, I heard the Netanyahu one.
Yeah.
I thought it was extremely good.
Yeah.
Very spot on.
Usually, I mean, he's very eloquent, but, you know, you're not a neutral, so...
No, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he referred to Ahmadinejad as the madman or something, didn't he? And he said, some of you heard this madman's speech... And some of you got up and walked out.
Mm. Right.
But all of you should have.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Was that a valid point for him to make? Should we be calling him a madman, or should we be...
Ahmadinejad?
Yeah. I'm just saying... Yeah.
It's very different. This isn't the person that was... This isn't Abbas. This is another guy that did speech.
This is
another
president of Iran.
Yes, he is a madman.
Yeah. I saw there was an interview between him.
That's settled then.
One of the American TV guys, what's he called? Not Jay Leno, but one of those sorts of people.
Letterman.
Yes, I think it was Letterman did an interview with Ahmadinejad.
Really?
Yeah, very bizarre. But he was talking about the Holocaust and how. One interesting point. Here's a point I'll chuck out for us to answer. It made me think. I was like, right, okay. Haven't we got an answer to that off the top of my head? He said, right, let's say. He's not he's probably a Holocaust denier, but he said, let's just say that they did do it, and it was the extent. His point was, and this will get us going on the land, why didn't they just, if Europeans did it to them, why didn't they just get given a piece of Europe to make up for it? So here's a big question, why were they given Israel back? Mm. What is it about Israel that they had that right to discuss?
Mm. Well, this is where the world's perspective is political. And whereas those who support Israel, as Christians particularly, have a biblical, and those two just don't mix. Mm. They very can't argue a three-dimensional problem from a fourth-dimensional perspective, because those people that think politically just don't understand your point of view. It's very, very. That's why it's such a difficult situation.
Well, so how do you expect sort of Jews to want to settle in Europe, where exactly. European Jews that were killed to start with, you know, that's Poland, right. decimated from Poland? So.
Well, it's a history that goes right back, isn't it?
And the land of Israel, which was Palestine until 1948, had the space. People have the impression that the Israelis came in, or the Jewish people came in, removed all those Palestinians who were living on that land, and built their own country, whereas most of the land was empty. They didn't chuck anybody out. And you only have to go to Israel today to see the huge areas where there is no one. A place like Male Adumim on the edge of Jerusalem. I mean, we went there several years ago. We stood on the edge of that town, and we stood and looked right down to the Dead Sea, and around it was desert. Mm-hmm. It was desert. They've built on desert land. Mm-hmm. And it rightfully belonged to them as well.
And the whole idea that really there was no such thing as a Palestinian until after the Six-Day War. Mm. The people were from various different, like from Jordan or Egypt, places like that.
Yeah, there wasn't the term. There wasn't the term Palestinian wasn't used before that. No. But the people still existed
as indigenous people,
but they just acquired that title.
That's
they
right.
Didn't so there wasn't to be called Palestinians.
No. I mean, it was called Palestine because the Romans called it that because it suggested. It was the enemies of the Jews.
But you know, the Jews of the land called themselves Palestinians.
Right.
Jerusalem Post used to be the Palestinian.
That's right.
I know I've said this story before. It's only something that just occurred to me when I did my research. Mm. But when I looked at the origins of these missions in the East End, there's the mission that's called CMJ now, used to be called the London Jews Society or the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel to the Jewish People. Anyway, in 1809, they got founded in East London. When they grew to a certain extent, they wanted a place to actually have as their home, as their training centre, and they got this plot of land in Bethnal Green and got the money together for a great big building, a centre, and they needed a name for it. And the name they came up with was Palestine Place. And what I would say is, why would they have used the name Palestine if it was just a name used for Arab settlers in Israel or Palestine? You know, it's a name that they identified with. Mm. The Jewish people or missions to the Jews identified with the name Palestine as referring to the people in the land who, you know, were Jews as well as obviously Arabs there as well. But it wasn't just Arabs who were calling themselves Palestinians. So this is a new thing. Saying.
So all we can agree on then is that labels don't necessarily matter. Mm. These people could be called anything. It just so happens that they're called Palestinians, but they're still people. Mm.
But it's an exploitation of that name, isn't it? Because it's taken on a whole load of connotations now. Basically, the Palestinians today are Arab people who have immigrated into the land, but they are not Jewish.
Mm. And they're also their victims of the situation.
Definitely.
As pawns.
So we shouldn't really argue semantics, and we shouldn't argue just, you know, oh, the label Palestinian, it doesn't count. It's just a label.
Yeah, you know. But the thing is, there was no such thing as a Palestinian money. There was no Palestinian.
But that doesn't matter.
Yeah. It was just various
people. Well, it is in a way.
It's, oh, no, it's stripping them of their land, making up
a history. The question doesn't exist.
The question is, have they created a culture to support an argument?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, arguably they have, but their culture wasn't such that, you know, they were regulated within the state. Their culture was as land dwellers and you know, nomadic people, but they were still natives of that land.
Yeah, but you're true what you're saying, but that's not what the world thinks. There was a Palestinian state at some point that the Jews took away, and that's why they want a state. There was never a state, and that's all we're saying.
There's never been a cohesive Palestinian culture.
But in the same way, you mentioned their map, their supposed map covering the whole of that strip. Now, the argument the Old Testament argument, the covenant argument with God giving the covenant to Abraham and promising the whole of that land. Mm. That land has never been fully realised, has it? Like from the Nile to the Euphrates or something like that.
Yeah.
That obviously they must take that, and I'm talking about Arabs. Mm. They must take that as big a threat to their claim to that land as you know, you probably are threatened by the fact that they're claiming Palestine as the whole of Palestine, not just...
Yeah, but the difference is that Arabs and Muslims control 95% of the Middle East. All Jews are looking for one little bit of land.
But they're not. They're looking for more than
the
that.
Whole thing
it's not much bigger. Not much more.
No, but see, we can read the subtext that the Palestinians want... Mm. Like Israel to cease to exist, but in the same way they're reading the Jewish subtext, which is, we want the whole of the land that we were promised.
The challenge is,
but not to kill all the Arabs.
You see,
how do they know that? Well, it's been done before. I mean,
it's not. If you're going back to Scripture never says, and in the future there will only be Jews there, and no one else is allowed to live there.
No, but the Jews. Well, like if you look at biblical history, there is a precedent.
There is
ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
So obviously we can't rule out, or Arabs can't rule out that's in the Jewish plan.
I mean, it's probably true in a way. If that they would look at scripture in that way and think.
There are three things. There's being driven out the land, and the land being destroyed. There's the opening up of foreigners to become part of the covenant community. So even Solomon, when he's dedicating the temple, says. Let any foreigners come and pray towards his temple, and may you hear them. You read, I think, when it's Solomon's list of people, you see there's a large chunk of foreigners that are living amongst the land.
But the modern language is a Jewish state.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But here's the difference. 1922, the San Remo Agreement, was where all the big powers of the world, with the League, was it the League of Nations. League of Nations, Nations, which preceded the UN, came to an absolute agreement that created 21 Arab states and one Jewish state. That was all agreed. So all these modern Arab states, they were put down as legal entities in that agreement. But the Arab states have got 21 states, one Jewish state. And that was the agreement, and that's been blown out of the water since then.
Because the whole area that was given to them was then chopped up. Winston Churchill took away, 72% of it and created Transjordan. That is a Palestinian state. No Jew is allowed to live there.
That's right.
Whereas look at the number of foreigners that live in present-day Israel. Israel has never said that they won't have Palestinians living in their state.
But
they have equal rights to Jews.
If you look at the history of that land that is now Jordan... That was never Palestine. That was never historically... Palestine never extended east of the Jordan River. Palestine has always been that strip of land east of the Jordan.
Palestine included in the mandate. Included.
Oh, in the mandate?
Yeah.
Yeah, but historically...
The whole administrative area.
Yes, but that's Palestine.
You're talking about hundreds of years.
That's administrative. That's... You know,
but that's all it ever was, an administrative area.
If it was historically called Palestine, then it was part of Israel, because Palestine was called Palestine by the Romans.
I know.
To irritate.
But that didn't include...
I think it did, though.
It didn't.
I think it did. Both sides.
Oh, you're talking about biblically?
Biblically.
You had the half
tribe of Manasseh. No, I think Simon's talking about Middle Ages up until the 19th century.
We're not looking at political lines. We're looking at indigenous people of the land would class as Palestine wouldn't necessarily move that further east of the Jordan.
I think it was because Jordan wasn't...
It didn't exist.
No,
it was just Palestine. Syria. I think Syria existed, but not Jordan. So I think Palestine extended over the Jordan River.
I'd like to argue.
Definitely.
Well, we need some facts.
Turkish Ottoman Empire.
That's
Did they speak about Palestine even then?
Yeah.
Was there mention?
Yeah.
I mean, you're right what you say. I mean, we know that the Romans called it. We think it may have been something like Philistinia or something, or Palestinia, which has later become Palestine. But I'm just thinking, whilst the Turks were ruling it, this giant landmass, did they talk about Palestine?
Yeah,
I've not seen any historical records of that.
Mark Twain call it Palestine.
Yeah, but this is
when he quoted "Palestine lies in sackcloth and ashes." Mm-hmm. Did there he use a couple of the word that Palestine? Used that word Palestine?
He did. 1800s. Yeah. But to be fair, he also used that description to describe bits of Greece as well.
Maybe it was like that in Greece
as
well.
Yeah, but Greece is also quite built up and quite populous.
But it wasn't.
Mark Twain
described it as desolate, but Mark Twain also described Syria and Greece as desolate. Yeah.
I don't honestly know.
But Greece also could have been desolate, but Greece was also, as we know, quite well populated. So by the same equation, Mark Twain could have.
But there are others besides Mark Twain. He's just the most famous.
Are you saying Palestine could be used there as a general term for desolateness?
No.
Then
no. I'm saying that if Mark Twain could describe Greece as desolate, then describing Palestine as desolate doesn't say much.
There were others. There was Murray McShane, the Scottish preacher.
He talked
said
about
the same thing. I'm trying to think of other people.
But even if you go to Israel now, there are many parts of Israel that you can describe as desolate.
Mm. But Jerusalem was a ruin. Mm. No one wanted to live there. Rubbish piled high, he said. And now, you know, the Muslims want to say that Jerusalem's always been precious to them. They couldn't care less throughout all those centuries.
Mm.
If they had cared, they would have built it up like Mecca.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They only wanted it the minute the Jewish people wanted it.
Okay, but that's like saying we don't use this room in our house very often. But if our house was to be like invaded, we'd claim that as ours, surely. Like, it might not mean much to us now, but if this house were to be like taken over by squatters, we would be fairly protected over
the difference
most of it.
It's a discussion. Politics versus biblical.
But I think even on top of that,
those two can never really come to an agreement.
They're trying to fool the world, which they probably are. But I'm saying there's good reason why they're so protective over a region that, you know, for the last like however many hundreds of years, they've felt like it's been their sort of territory.
But it really is a smokescreen. It's really hiding the true thing.
With the house analogy, the difference, or one of the differences, depending on how you view it, obviously you own every part of this house. And that's where the challenge is. What is the difference between populating a place and having a right to a place, owning a place, and dwelling in a place? And that's where the challenges get. Who owned the land,
who they have this thing about, we don't own the land owns us, in a sense they belong to the land.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's been a sense of possession by them, it doesn't belong to them.
And that's where the difficulty like is. Mm. If someone lives there, do the Arab people that live there in the various years and during various times, when did they own it? When did they dwell in something that wasn't really owned? When were they stewards of it? And when was it their ownership? And how does that work?
By the Ottoman Empire, it was
up until what? 1920
or something?
Turkish land.
Yeah.
And then the Jews bought parcels of land, so they actually bought it legally.
Yeah.
And then they reclaimed the lands out of the swamp.
There was never a Palestinian government.
I know.
Or Palestinian money.
Yeah.
But there were people living there. But there were Jewish people living there and Bedouins, wandering Bedouins.
The people
were stable cities.
And the people were tenants, as it were, rather than owners. And this is where we're now getting to the realm of, does the fact that someone, it's almost not squatters' rights, it's probably a really bad example, but it is almost a sense, okay, because they have in a squatters' rights-esque sense been living there, does that entitle them to ownership? And what about if someone legally gets given that land from those that do have more of a right of ownership to it? You know, yes, you need to treat those that live there with respect and, you know, you need to give them housing and that sort of stuff, which I think Israel is doing and trying to do. But the fact that those people are there doesn't mean that they have ownership of it. And thus, do you know what I mean? It is that difficult balance between someone that lives there, which are obviously Arab people living there, and who owns the land, and that's what they're trying to say is because we dwelt there, it's because we probably owned it. And that's where the questions
are coming
up. When the Jewish
people came back from Russia very gradually, late 19th century, the 1880s, 1890s, when they started making Aliyah, they bought that land from the Turkish landlords who were only too pleased to sell it. And right. Arabs who happened to be living there worked for them as well. Mm. And they got as much out of it as the Jewish people. But the Jewish people bought that land.
Yeah.
They drained the swamps, areas like the Hula Valley, which were swamps, mosquito-ridden. The Jewish people gave their lives for it, but they built up that land.
And the point about that is that there was no problems with the Arabs until about the 1920s, when militant Islam came onto the scene.
That's right.
And also discovery of oil and politics and Britain and all these other factors came in.
It was partly when Britain came in.
You never had massacres. When the Jews came in the 19th century, they weren't in the Arabs didn't fight them.
No.
They worked with them.
They welcomed them.
They welcomed them. It's from the 1920s when it got political.
Mm.
That was when it's the bother came. Mm. So you have to look at that as a real fact.
But the result of it didn't... What happened in 1947, it wasn't a result of this. What do you mean by bother?
Massacres of Jews by Arabs who were fired up by... Who's that bloke? Arafat's uncle. Yeah, the friend of Hitler.
Amin Husseini.
Of Jerusalem, yeah. Really, real anti-Semite, yeah. And it was just people for their own purposes just causing problems. Yeah. And they couldn't go to the Western Wall. The people were massacred.
Mm.
And of course, there's fighting on both sides, obviously. But the point being that they were at peace up to that point.
Mm.
Something happened in the 20s. And it was politics and Islam came into the factor, into the mix.
And Britain's need for oil as well.
And Britain, Britain is probably the biggest, troublemaker of the lot.
And Britain couldn't decide whose side they were on.
No.
Mm. It should have been neutral.
Made promises to both sides.
Absolutely, that's right.
To both sides.
Yeah. So politics, so in a way, you can't blame the Arabs or the Jews. It's probably the Western powers that caused a lot of the problems, But the situation, is where are we now, going back to the United Nations?
Given all that, is there a feasible solution to the whole thing, given where we are now? I mean, is the solution we have at the moment?
Netanyahu recently was, if the Arab nations laid down their arms, there'd be peace with Israel. If Israel laid down its arms, it would be destroyed overnight.
Yeah.
And I think that's a reality and a truth of what's happening right now.
He's quite for the Palestinian state, isn't he?
Hmm.
And that's what he said.
In his speech,
he said he'd be one of the first nations to acknowledge him or to welcome him with open arms. I can't remember the actual words.
Yeah.
So he's not against it. I mean, Israel is looking for peace. And the land, let's say, that they have at the moment, I'm quite certain they'd give up more of it and more of it and more of it as long as they can live in peace.
Mm.
But we know the plan.
Mm.
We know... It's
never been revoked, the Palestinian Charter.
No, that's right, and they won't. Revoked
about, driving the Jews out of the land.
Mm.
It's never been revoked.
There was something, I've forgotten the guy's name now, but they're saying really that it's the Palestinians, if you want to call them that, the Arabs who call themselves Palestinians, there should be a referendum and they should decide what happens to the Israeli people.
The thing is, the Palestinians have refused to come to the table to talk. Netanyahu has said he is absolutely prepared to, but the Palestinians won't do it unless certain conditions are met. And these are things to be talked about, not to be conditions before, such as settlement building and the borders. Mm. Well, how can you have, a table, everyone there starting from scratch and discussing it.
Mm.
They've said what they want and they won't move from it before they discuss. It's the wrong way
around. They want the right of return from 1947 as well. They were talking about all the people, all the Palestinians that lost their houses when Israel was declared a state for whatever reason. I know debate. All those people, some of them actually, and this took the key to the house with them, and that key has been passed from generation to generation, and it's become a big sort of an emblem of what they see as their tragedy, the catastrophe. And they're saying those people should be allowed back to their family homes that was that were taken 70 years ago.
We're talking about their descendants, aren't we?
Descendants, not the people.
Yes, they're descendants. Yeah. So
but if that happened, then...
What were we talking about, 6 million?
Mm. Yeah, so a big number. Well, not
because
that,
of
no,
all
not
the...
No,
yeah.
No,
many, I don't know.
700,000. 700,000.
Really?
Oh, it's bigger than that.
I thought it was greater than that.
600,000.
Oh, yes.
It's definitely the worldwide diaspora now of ex-refugees.
We're talking about the refugee, and the figures that I remember, which may be wrong, is... The number of Jews who were kicked out of his of Islamic lands was about the same number of the number of Palestinians.
Yeah, I think you got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's in this book, right. Outcast Nation.
Which I've read recently.
Which is very recently.
But if you add all the descendants
I don't think it's millions.
In,
yeah, obviously with descendants, right. It runs into the millions. Which is a totally impractical thing.
And therefore one has to say, why have the Jewish refugees not claimed various things? They have been absorbed around the world and back into Israel. Yeah. Who's bothered to absorb the Palestinians? The same number. Absolutely. No one, because they've been used as pawns in this conflict.
Yeah. Absolutely. People don't know it or don't see it or don't want to see it.
Don't want to see it.
There's always that anti-Jewish sentiment under the surface with a lot of people.
And why don't people believe what Netanyahu and the Israelis say? That they do want peace. They do want to discuss it.
Why wouldn't they want peace? Why wouldn't a civilised country want to live in peace?
Democracy.
Do you really think they want to destroy the Arabs or conquer the lands around
them? Yeah, that's what the Arabs probably think.
But for the same reasons why we
think that the Arabs want to drive the Jews into the sea.
Yes, because they say it.
They've
say
said it. They've said it in their official statement.
Yeah, it's in their
It's not like a thought, that they're all, not just a fear, it's written in their constitution.
Yeah, but I'm sure any like learned Muslim will know that this is, you know, the Jewish plan is to claim the land entitled to them. So there must be an equal fear that Israel won't want to stop at their own agreed borders. They'd want to continue expanding.
But they don't need to expand. As Moira says, they don't need to expand.
In that case, why are they going to give up Gaza?
Yes, you just have to look at what's happened. Mm. They left Gaza. What happened?
No peace.
They destroyed everything that the Jewish people had built up and started shooting from there. Mm. I mean, that tells Israel what their intentions are.
In the last few years.
That's right.
We've gone from there into Israel. Several thousand.
All the beautiful greenhouses, all the infrastructure, they destroyed everything Jewish.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you talk to the Israelis, if you go over there and you just talk to normal men and women in the streets, we want peace at any cost.
Yeah, so the ordinary Palestinian.
They're brought up from their school reading with books that just incite hatred towards Jews in Israel. Mm. They are embedded in their as they grow.
So, for example, are you aware of the growing distrust in Israel of their own government? And the growing liberal movement
in
Israel.
That's the same.
So I don't think that the government at the moment in Israel are the right government at this time to actually bring peace to the region. I think they're way too... I mean, who's the guy? Avigdor Lieberman, the ex-Israel Beitenu leader. He's an extreme racist who's got a seat in the current government. And
but there's lots of Arabs who got a seat in the government as well.
That's not my argument, but the government at the moment aren't seen by normal Israelis as the government to bring peace. And I think there needs to be change in Israel.
If those liberals got in power and put down their arms, Israel would be destroyed.
What do you think happens to liberals in Iran and Syria and all those countries? They don't exist. It just shows the difference between the societies.
But I'm not arguing that.
But our
focus should be on what Israel should do, not what Arab states are doing.
That's an ideal situation. Because if Israel, as someone says, if Israel agreed with the liberals and put down their arms, it's not what Israel does, it's what the other countries are going to do. Mm.
They're not going to go, they're going to destroy them. We'll be peaceful.
I know.
Yeah. You go, now's their chance. Crush them.
Yeah.
But isn't this a sorry conclusion that they'll more or less never be peace. Like, there'll never be...
I don't think there will be. No. I think it's the answer is biblical and involves the Messiah. And it's not going to be done by political means. I mean, you can do everything you can to do what you can to create as much peace as you can, but ultimately it's not going to be done politically.
You could compare it to the Cold War, if you like, in that there's massive stockpiles, weapons, and USA and Russia fighting each other, and you knew that one little trigger could set the whole thing off, as it almost did in the, the Bear
Cuban crisis. Cuban thing.
But that gradually got to a point where actually this is silly. We got all these weapons. We can't carry on like this. There was a certain amount of common sense came into that discussion. This has got a different dimension to it, a spiritual dimension, and it's got a ownership of land dimension, which I think you didn't have with the USA and Russia. There's not many arguments about that. So I think it's much more complex, but there was a possibility that the piece of the tension could be lessened, maybe, to a point where actually sense could come into it and you could say, there are some things we're prepared to accept.
In their case, it was the fact of this mutually assured destruction, if mad. Mm. The fact that they had so many weapons, they knew they could destroy the world. That actually kept the peace, didn't it?
Yep.
And which is probably what's keeping the peace of Israel.
It wouldn't have been a peace if the Americans decided, let's get rid of our weapons because it's wrong to keep them.
So Russians would have said, has to be armed to the teeth. They have to be armed to the teeth.
It has to be a gradual withdrawal on both sides, not,
But, we need to appreciate that there are just as many Israeli extremists that don't want peace either, who would much prefer for this this whole situation to continue. Mm. There are Israelis in the settlements that are hell-bent on claiming all their land that they think is rightfully theirs, in the same way that Arabs want to claim land that they think is rightfully theirs. Until those people are
The difference is, in the Jewish side, it's the minority. In the Arab side, it's the government policy. That's the difference.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a difference between the odd sort of right-wing settler in Israel who are not doing good stuff. But to compare that with an Arab country whose very policy is aggression against Israel.
It's religious as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right. It's religious as well. We mustn't forget
that if the land,
let's say, was occupied by the Turkish Ottoman Empire, then the land all belongs to Allah. And then along comes Britain, gives over the land, doesn't it, to the Jewish people.
Yeah.
And Arabs as well, at the same time.
Oh, yes, I have to say that as well. Yeah. But that land has to be completely Arab. It's got to be completely given over to Allah.
They have the same feeling about southern Spain.
Yeah.
Southern Spain was Muslim once.
And the
Islamic people at the top still believe that is Islamic land, and one day it will be reclaimed.
How funny is it that at the moment, in Israel, it's the minority of racists against a government that is talking about peace, whereas on the other side, it's the government that is hell-bent on not having peace, and it's the actual ordinary Palestinians that probably want peace.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Those are not indoctrinated.
The world wants to vilify the Israeli government and stand up for the Palestinians that want peace. And it's like a really
it's twisted. Twisted perception.
There has to be a reason. Why would these countries want to support, let's say, Palestine or the Arabs? Why?
It's humanist.
It's humanist.
You have to go back to the United Nations. The majority of countries in the United Nations are pro-Palestinian.
Yeah.
Because in the 70s, Russia saw it was starting to losing the Cold War, and it wanted to get back at America, and for them Israel was a puppet of America.
Yeah.
So there was it started getting to the communist nations started to go alongside the Muslim nations, so that as a bloc within the United Nations, they could pass all these resolutions against Israel.
Yeah.
So when we hear the statistics, like half of all resolutions have been against Israel. It's because the communist bloc and the Muslims have worked together And that's what's happening now. That's why so many nations...
What did the Muslims, or what did the other side receive, though? By this kind of the communist, alliance?
The communist... hatred of America and Israel. It's this,
but nothing else? No money? No.
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah.
No kind of blackmail? Not blackmail, what do you call it?
Coercion.
Bribery.
Yeah.
I mean, if for example, we weren't to support, let's say, Palestine, would suddenly our oil supplies be cut off?
What, England, you mean?
Yeah.
In fact, how's the voting gone?
They haven't voted.
They haven't voted.
There was just another vote in, wasn't it?
From Quartet or something? Have said they want to bring the partners to the table to discuss, but no vote in sight.
And Israel has agreed that, though, hasn't it? Has agreed with the Quartet.
Because it sounds like the world, for once, is being sensible and saying, look, just declaring a state isn't going to solve it. Let's go back to the table.
Have they actually said...
But the Palestinians haven't agreed. They don't want that.
So has the world now said that was a waste of time?
No.
No.
It's on the table. They're going to discuss around it for several months and then bring it back in, probably.
They want it solved within a year, I think it is.
So discuss the shape of the table, you know.
But if Abbas, for example, if he were to actually say... Okay, we want peace with you, Israel.
What would happen? Say Israel.
Zionist entity.
But with this kind of Jewish state, okay, we acknowledge you, and we will safeguard your security. Would he be killed, do you think?
That's
do you
think? He's never going to say.
No,
we can be quite sure of that.
But why is he not saying it, though?
Because he doesn't recognise Israel in the first place.
You're right.
So.
He's the majority of people in there.
He's not the right leader for the nation. Yeah, yeah, be a traitor.
He's a traitor, you know. Mm. They have to deal with Hamas and PLO.
But isn't it interesting that none of the other nations, like our nation, said, oh, come on, Abbas, pull yourself together a little bit. Yeah. I mean, why don't you... they just want your words.
Because they don't understand it either. They've got their own agenda and they actually don't really understand it.
Politics is not... human. I mean, it's not sensible. No. It's all about manipulations behind the scenes for various purposes.
Have we written to David Cameron, any of us?
Yes, I have written to David Cameron.
Good. Yeah. Have you had a reply?
Wrote to three other. I actually did have a card the other day.
Did you?
But it didn't say anything. It just says, we've read your letter, thank you. I can't remember. I don't think it said anything. Yeah, I also had one from the Commonwealth and Foreign Office. I read it and I thought, well, you just haven't understood what I've written, have you? I sent them a booklet. I sent them Roy Thurley's booklet.
What?
90 years old. But I know friends who've given your booklet to quite prominent people. Mm. Have they read it? Mm. I don't know.
I think, to be honest, most other governments don't care. Their attitude is, as long as whichever results in the least people dying, we'll go for that option. We don't really care who it is.
There are really random countries that do care a lot, or at least the population do, like Argentina and Norway.
Canada. Israel. Very quite pro-Israel.
Yes.
And a lot of countries Scandinavian strong opinions as well.
Like something you wouldn't... You can't see the connection.
Well, because there are people within that nation that understand the reality of it. That's why most people don't. Most people.
And it might be they don't rely on oil. Oil has to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to laugh at that one time.
Yeah.
I can't have anything to do with oil, but
found oil Israel. We need Zion oil. Yeah, off the coast of...
Yeah. Whose oil is that now? Is that Israel's or is that...
It's near to Israel. Turkey are claiming it. Yeah. That's why they're at war with...
LA's claiming it, are Turkey?
Oh, yeah, but it's right off the Israeli coast, you know.
Right.
You know, so,
isn't it, though, also a God thing, to put it rather crudely? But if you support Israel and the Jewish state, you are supporting God, the God of Israel, not Allah. And that is ultimately what the whole battle is about.
I realise there's a difference.
Mm. No, a lot of people, and it's very
the secular world.
But Christians don't understand it either.
Too, they don't realise it.
In Iran, have you heard about this?
Yes, the pastor.
I don't know if he's a pastor. Well, my understanding.
When he's threatened with death.
Yeah, he's just be. I don't know how many when he became.
Israel, yeah. Definitely.
Anyway, he became a Christian. Oh, we mustn't play with our mobiles whilst we're talking. But oh, sorry, not allowed to say that. Oh, he's taking a single. But listen. Who used to say that? Listen. What comedian was that?
Frankie Howard.
Listen. But anyway, this Christian in Iran. Okay, initially he was going to be executed. because of apostasy. Okay, he's left. Yeah. He's left the. He's left Alab's. Alab's. I don't
Islam.
Know. Yes, he's left him as well. Yeah, Islam. Right.
Not religion.
Now, now they were going to execute him, but they've decided not to execute him on that ground. We pray to God that he's not executed anyway. But why they're going to execute him is because he's a lover of Israel. He's a Zionist.
Yes. Yeah.
And also what they've done, they've thrown in a couple of other things. Like that doesn't go down, like rape and that, you know. So that's the reason why this Christian, okay, is going to be executed. So, listeners, just keep that in mind and just pray for
him. Definitely.
It's interesting that the Israel thing got chucked in. It shows that they see the Israel thing. It shows that they see that supporting Israel as offensive as believing in another God, which shows the Arab viewpoint of supporting Israel is as bad as supporting a completely different God, because partially because they're right. You know what I mean? But for them, it's that important. It's on that sort of level.
But the thing is, Christians don't see it that way. And one of you earlier mentioned there's this growing movement to bring Christians and Islam together. Was that
something about Chrislam?
Chrislam.
Yeah, I have read it. I have also heard it's a hoax. I don't know. No, I've heard both sides, but I do believe there is that is an issue.
And that some Christian leaders are signed up for it.
Yes,
the problem is
it's the same God.
Definitely, it is.
But it's sort of a precursor of
I remember reading that one of the. I must say one of the weirdest Christian Islam links I remember once reading up about was on the link between Catholicism and areas of Islam, because the Catholics claimed, I think, I don't know, I'm not sure 100% when, it was 70s or 80s, there was some kind of appearance of Mary in a place called Fatima. Fatima was one of Muhammad's favourite daughters. And so from that point, there was a little bit of a sort of nod to each other, that God was, you know, same sort of God, you know, appearance of Fatima, Fatima Islam, Fatima Mary. So there was some little minor inroads and, you know, some Islamic people and some Catholic people sort of, sort of shaking hands and going, you know, this is good,
but
you know, let's keep going with it.
Messianic Jews, why can't you have Messianic Muslims?
Well, because
the issue with the Muslims,
sort of Judaism is the root of Christianity. It's directly linked.
Yes, it's all point of view.
Just to backtrack very slightly, I think it was a hoax. On Wikipedia, there is two Chrislams. One is actually a religion in Nigeria who brings together Christianity and Islam.
Mm-hmm.
For the fictional religion, go to this other link.
The
Hammer of God.
But there is obviously one in Africa.
And another name. Yeah, Nigeria, but that is not what we're talking about.
No.
The name Rick Warren. Rick Warren was mentioned.
Rick Warren and quite a few others. Robert Schuller, I think. Quite a few others from the States.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Hold on.
I revisited it yesterday, but I haven't remembered it.
But no, the issue with Islam, Messianic Muslims, for example, or the difficulty or the difference is, I remember explaining to the kids, you know, a Jew is someone that is waiting for the Messiah. A Christian or a Messianic Jew is someone that believes that that Messiah has come.
Mm.
Whereas Islam, Islam's concept of a Messiah is completely
lacking.
They're waiting for Jesus to come down.
Islam is the superior.
To come down, destroy all crosses.
And that he's lower than Muhammad, basically.
They also don't believe that he died. Many believe that Judas actually got put on the cross last minute.
Yeah.
So
they're saying is, and this is where it shows you how ridiculous replacement theology is, because they're actually saying, well, you Christians, you say you've replaced the Jews, well, we have replaced you.
Yes.
Really?
That's it, because we came after you. We've got a later revelation.
Oh, right.
Mm. It's replacement theology. Yeah, so what they see Christians doing it to Jews, they're doing it to the Christians.
I've heard people trying to say, oh, you know, the three religions all highlight different aspects of God. Judaism highlighted the justice of God and his holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christianity highlighted sacrificial love. And then Islam highlighted brotherhood.
I was going to take the anger.
not quite. Yeah. But you get, again, you've got these sort of people, you've got very liberal, you get some very liberal churches that basically sit on the bandwagon and go, oh, well, you know, this will get along. You're almost there. In fact, I remember that couple that came round that live in Dubai, and he was sort of a minister, you know, of the first church we ever went to. Right, they're very much, you know, that same sort of idea that, you know, Islam is just another version. No, just that Islam's another version. You know, we're all praying to the same God, you know, just have a different name. I was like...
But then you have to ask, why are the Muslims so against Christians in some of the... Why are they so persecuted? Well,
because they understand it.
Yes, absolutely. That's right.
It's one of the things. Those that have actually thought it through very quickly recognise that these gods are not the same. It is the very sort of lazy off the shelf, usually not very religious, that will chuck that idea in, because it just sounds a lot nicer than some people being right and some people being wrong. But
there is a real spirit of death in Islam, you have to say, don't you? Whereas in Christianity, it's a spirit of life.
I've got a picture here of Rick Warren shaking hands with Cat Stevens.
Let's have a look.
There's a proof that...
Was he the one that became Faisal Islam? Oh, I was always very Cat sad Stevens, about yeah. that. I
Rick
liked
Warren
Cat
calls
Stevens.
Himself American pastor. He's the one that sort of swore in Barack Obama.
That's right.
They're now saying... You can't always believe the web, but it says that he's one of those that's embraced this.
Yeah. Now, I've heard... Islam, I know some of the people that have... very carefully read through Rick Warren's stuff, and spoken to him, and I've some pastors that I very much trust have said he is okay, but the difficulty with Rick Warren seems to be, and again we can't quite see, you know, to be honest, I've hugged Muslims, I've shook their hands, you know, it wouldn't be right for him to throw a stone at him or anything. What we've got to see is quite what these people specifically believe, those if they are. This is an independent website. It's taken a picture of Rick Warren shaking hands with someone that is a Muslim, and it's now saying that this guy is supporting an Islamic Christianity, which, from what I've heard of his work, would not be in tune with what he's actually said. Maybe wrong. Maybe he's done a massive turnaround.
Well, he's not here to respond, so he should.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry about
him. But I think it's very important that
next time.
But it is very important to be discerning and to be checking everything out, but also to be aware that, you know, I remember he was challenged, you know, why did you let Obama in? Why did you do a... He said, look, I don't support politics. He said, I'm not right-wing, I'm not left-wing, I'm the whole bird, was his face. He said, I don't support abortion.
The whole bird.
I don't support any of that. He said, for me, it was an opportunity for him to have a voice to Christian people. And for us to hear about him. But, you know, I think, not that I know a vast amount about him, but he does seem to be the sort of person that is trying to get to know people. And, you know, in the same way that Jesus met with prostitutes and people probably, if there were cameras nowadays, it would be right on the front page of the Sun. Jesus joins prostitute Christianity forum. You know what I mean? We've got to be careful when we see things to really make sure exactly what every member of each party is saying. I'm not necessarily that I'm particularly pro, but it'd be interesting to find out who supports what and what is this Chris Lam thing.
We're spending too much time on Islam. I think we started talking about something, but we then moved away. But the fact that it's a spiritual problem really does seem to be the only answer to the fact that a lot of people, particularly Christians, just are so blinded by only a quick reading of a history book should be enough to convince a right-minded person to see the truth in what's going on, but they don't, whether it's because they don't want to see it or because there's something deeper going on. And we sort of alluded to
a particular book in mind, Steve.
Outcast Nation, around 500 pages of pure treasure. out on January the 21st.
Will it take very long to read, Steve?
No, not at all, but 2 hours.
I think the challenge also is, the other thing is you get, obviously, understandably and rightly so, you have people... that have been, for example, either kicked out of their house or have had to live in a particular area that has been difficult to live by. And so rightly, you think, underdog, these people have had a difficult life, and therefore your empathy, rightly, goes out to them. But as you mentioned, Dad, you know, there is a sense in which areas of Islam use people as pawns. You know, it's not at all a surprise that some of the weapon bases for various Islamic nations are built right next to schools and hospitals. So you blow it up, and you blow up a school, and then what hits the news? Yeah. Israel blows up school. Yeah. You know, there is some dark tactical uses of people's struggles to make a picture that is far...
And also, the reason why there's been, over the past, say, 10 years, where there's been so much media criticism of Israel, particularly from the BBC and all that, is because the Israelis allow the press free movement. Mm. So they see these things, they get the wrong end of the stick, but it goes back to their news offices. Mm. That's why you don't see all the things that go on inside Syria, Iran, you know, because the press are not allowed there or only shown certain things. Mm. And so in a way, like Israel, through its democratic nature, is shooting itself in the foot from a public relations point of view, and which is why the truth doesn't get out and why, you know, we need, and people like us need to sort of try to redress the balance and get the truth out there.
This is interesting. I think the Israeli army set up a YouTube channel and they actually put up videos of what they were doing when they were doing it, because they knew that as things happened, other viewpoints would very quickly come out. And so obviously, you remember the ship...
That was a massive
issue.
But Israel also is not very good at responding immediately.
Right.
It will have an inquiry and then it will say the truth, by which time the world has moved on.
Yeah.
And they're not willing to change their minds.
Yeah, and remember that the flotilla, everyone will always think of that as a bad Israeli thing.
Yeah.
But the truth has come out since, and we know what really happened.
And we only have to go back
to the world.
Who knows it?
Who knows what?
Who knows about the truth? Of the flotilla. Some of us are interested in know the truth, but the majority of people won't know that.
They haven't had even the news story. Even if you go to the BBC and dig deep enough, you'll see the truth there.
I haven't heard it on television.
You won't hear it. No. It'll be there, and they know the truth, but they
don't. Panorama presented it, didn't know the truth of it.
Yeah, well, Panorama. Yeah. That was a plus.
Yeah, but one of very few.
But I mean, if you think, I mean, Turkey carried out a in-depth report, didn't they? Of it. Three days of in-depth study of what happened, and they believed that the Israelis handled or didn't behave themselves as such. Now, Israel, of course, have looked at it as well, and I think they spent over a year, haven't they, coming up. They've published something, but I've not seen it printed. Right. But why should we believe the Israelis? Well, I'm not saying I don't believe the Israelis, but...
That is the general...
Yeah.
The challenge is that everything has got to be out there and visible. Yeah. But the problem is, people don't really think that much through, and you know, it's off the shelf opinion. Yeah. What three or four television stations
It's a world of sound bites, isn't it?
Yeah,
people are not interested. They want something that tickles them.
They want bottom line, you know.
Yeah, it's the same in anything, really.
And the enemies of Israel are working extremely hard to get their side out, their negative side out. I mean, I have been in Covent Garden on the odd occasion outside the Ahava shop. And thought, in my naivety, if I give them this and talk to them about that, you know, they might see it. No way. They are not interested, do not want to know, shout you down. They've got their own agenda.
What are they doing in the Harvest Shop?
Well, the Harvest Shop has now closed in Covent Garden because of Palestine solidarity.
It was an Israeli shop.
It was an Israeli shop. Yeah. Actually, I think the owners of the shop, the people who worked in there, were actually just not interested in what was going on outside. Mm. But I can understand why pro-Israel activists stood outside, because lies were being told. And I think the pro-Israel side, they were not on the offensive. They were trying to speak to people, and it was a good place. But I tried to speak to those who were speaking lies, and it's just no good.
Are there things like this going on all the time?
Yeah.
Like activists for the Palestinian... Are they...
Yes, there's some there's something going on with a Tesco's store in London. Yeah. I know that. Yeah, there are various.
And you and your people were there, alert to it, and you.
Well, I just happened to go one day with Marion. Actually, I've been a couple of times. We went, but I know that there are Palestinian solidarity campaigners outside Marks and Spencer's on Oxford Street every Thursday, and I have walked past. And my goodness, you can feel the barbs as you walk by. I've said nothing, but they are out there.
What's their problem with Marks and Spencer's?
I don't know if that's strategic or not. Mm. Isn't Marks and Spencer's Jewish?
Yeah. Tesco's is Jewish.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all Jewish. You know.
But it's just a good place for them to stand.
I think them to sort of argue about, you know, you've got to have the, if stuff's grown on the West Bank, you've got to say and all that, and the packaging.
But they go into all the political stuff as well, and they're all lies.
Yeah.
It's really sad. I mean, I came across this in Germany. When was it? About 18 months ago, 2 years ago, when I was there. My poor pen friend didn't know what had become of me. But, you know, I tackled some of them outside Cologne Cathedral. Again, they were awful. Mm. It's lies. It's peddling lies. And I can't bear to see that.
Right.
Mm. This is a new me. I never used to be like this. But it's because it's about truth.
Yes.
It matters to me.
Mm. That's right.
Yeah. And the people who have been downtrodden
basically are bearing false witness.
Absolutely.
Mm. Mm. You know, they are breaking a major commandment there.
Mm.
They are bearing false witness about what's going on.
And they are persuading people who really know nothing.
There was a situation the other day, wasn't there, where you've got these jihadists in London burning the American flag, chanting, inciting, but police did nothing, didn't ask them to move on. So is it that perhaps the government's given an edict or something, saying to the police, you know,
well, it's
a little bit soft.
Mm. It's the PC thing over here. You know, you've got to let them have their freedom of expression.
But we're not allowed their freedom.
No, well, we're not. It's all right on their side, but not on...
When we were at Downing Street, the police were lovely.
Yeah.
They were really lovely. And they kept the two sides apart. It was very interesting, but the police were great, as were the police in Covent Garden. And we actually had some very good conversations with the police.
Right.
Because they hear all this stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But I think the issue of truth, in a way, those who are non-believers, in a way, they're excused because they don't know the truth. But to see Christians coming alongside the Palestinians in this overt way, they're the ones that we really need to talk about. You know, they're brothers and sisters in Christ. And yet, could you honestly go up to one of them and see him as a brother or sister? A Stephen Sizer, for instance, who seems to have such an intense hatred of Israel. You know, and you know he's visiting Iran, isn't he? He speaks to the Islamic Council over there. He's on all sorts of Palestinian websites. It's almost like he's got a sort of a crusade to speak against Israel. It's like something. What's driving him? Is it? Can it be the Holy Spirit that is driving someone to that, or is it something else? And
it has it's to
a,
be it's something.
A, yeah, it's a really big thing.
Mm.
You know, and you're saying that Anthony, what's his name? Is he involved with him?
Oh yeah,
are they together?
Yeah,
we knew him.
We knew it. Yeah, we know.
Sorry, Anthony.
Yeah, I don't know if we should mention his name.
A man called Anthony.
Anti-Semite.
Calls himself Christian.
No.
Yeah.
No? Not a friend, but someone they knew. An acquaintance.
Personal enemy.
I'll tell you where a couple of people get into this, though. It is purely from the empathy sector of hearing.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I don't think it's necessarily that everyone that is pro-Palestine is possessed. or being led into... It's primarily, they've swallowed the...
The lie.
Yeah, and they've also swallowed the... They've rightly, out of a point of compassion, compassionate to those that have suffered, but from that, they've stopped there and they've then got down to a political persuasion from that. And it comes from a right empathy. We should be caring about people, Palestinian, Arab, Christian, etc., etc. You love your enemies.
The thing is, a lot of those same people on the liberal left and stuff were pro the Jewish situation until the Jews got back into Israel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They
like
whoever. They love their Jews to be underdogs.
They switched them over. Yeah.
You know, as soon as they got in a position of back to Israel, they're the enemy. And all the irony of they're acting just like Nazis.
Yeah.
All that rubbish.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is people wanting. You know, it's the very simple, basic. We just want everyone to get along and be fine. And when they see a situation that isn't that, they side for who they perceive to be the one most suffering.
You've only got to
and it's just that.
Dell Farm, traveller site? Yeah. Traveller site in Basildon.
Mm.
It's incredible. I mean, these people, they bought a little bit of the land against all planning permission. They've extended it and extended it. The local authorities said you can't do that. It's gone over years and years and years, and they've said, well, you'd have to go. You know, they've started the machinery, you know, legislative machinery, and, you know, that takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of money as such. And then the High Court turned around and said, right, OK, they can go. And then somebody came along and questioned something, and then they said, no, they can't go. Then somebody else has come along to the High Court, yes, they can go. Now, apparently, they were told the other day, the local authorities were told, yes, you've got to get rid of them, but you can't knock down the brick walls, you can't remove the fences, you can't touch five of the dwellings, but the others can go. As long as someone else is coming along, you know, and said, no, they've got to stay there. But the reason why I mention this, it's this compassion thing, mm-hmm. you know, because there's a company, very well known, although it didn't mean anything to me, they're sponsoring. They're sponsoring these Dale Farm people.
Who are they?
There's this company, I won't mention its yeah. name, but they've come up with quite a few million pounds to help these poor people at Dale Farm. Mm-hmm. You know, now, if the truth were known that they're not paying their taxes, if the truth were known that they're, you know, splicing into electricity and not paying for their electricity, you know, but it's like genocide. Britain's committing genocide by evicting these people, but they knew that they shouldn't have been there in the first place.
It's one of those difficult things
another,
where...
There is another agenda on the other side of that story.
I'll take
apparently,
us to it.
There's a big possibility... Oh, we've gone off tangent a little
but,
bit.
But it's important.
Oh, yeah, there is a large concern about planning. Planning. Yeah. There's a big build of planning to actually build a lot of stuff on that greenbelt land around that area. I don't know the reality.
Well, initially, can I just say there, very quickly, initially that wasn't the case.
No.
Initially it was to for them to leave and just return it to nature. I mean, in the meantime, but possibly what they're saying is it's cost us all these millions of pounds. The only way we can recoup our money is to build it. But the point I was trying to get over is just this compassion. Mm. There are people who are misplaced.
Yeah. The challenge is compassion.
With truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, compassion and truth.
You know, we should be compassionate to everyone and anyone. You know, we should support people. We should seek people to be able to have access to hospitals, access to schools, access to all that. And I think many of them do. And I think those that aren't, as you say, are being used politically as pawns. But one of the main hooks for a lot of people is quite simply they see someone suffering and they very quickly go, right, one's an aggressor, one's a victim, we'll support the victim tooth and nail, without looking into, okay, actually, are there ways that the resources they do have can be better managed?
So it means
are there ways in which the media are manipulating who's the victim, who's the aggressor, and what the force is?
When the left wing get their own way and Israel drop their arms and get driven into the sea, then everyone will love
then
the Jews
again. Then it'll go the other way.
Everyone will love the Jews again.
Sometimes, sometimes in a very sort of bizarre way, sometimes I almost sit there and go, It's almost, obviously right there, but I don't think, but you can always imagine them going, why don't we just put them down for a month? You know, watch 10,000 of our own people get killed, and then we'll be everyone's friend again. Obviously, you shouldn't do that. But you can understand that is basically... But that is basically the only way that it's going to win, that people are going to look into the situation
and
again.
And that is why
Yeah,
and that is why Israel
suffers again.
That's why Israel do not care about people's opinion.
Because they know unless
they know
they're
people
suffering.
Are fickle. Yeah, they don't care. They never. They don't do anything to court world opinion.
Because and they know the only way to do it will be for them to suffer again. Mm. And they're sort of done with that for now.
Well, I think our listeners have suffered enough. That's enough for now. Yeah, time for tea, isn't it?